Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan Ducros.
What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Ducros Brothers of Sports Wars with your boys, Sean and Tristan Ducros. Sean, Sideshow, Freak Show, Bellator 145. What do you think?
It depends on how you want to look at it for Bellator when it comes down to the aspects of what they're trying to accomplish and whatnot. But you have to look past that right now and look at Bellator 145 for what it was. And Bellator 145 continues to be the promise of what Scott Coker and company continue to do. And that is put on a fight show for the fans, not for the MMA diehards. It does both. When you look at the freak show aspect of Bellator, if you want to even go that far, is the aspect of James Thompson versus Bobby Lashley. Not to take anything away from James Thompson, but you look at the hype and the surrounding of Bobby Lashley and what he brings to MMA is that kind of freak show aspect. Is he really as good as he looks, or is he just there because he's beating up guys that are simply smaller than him? See, you say smaller, I say that Colossus wasn't all that small. What was interesting about that fight between Bobby Lashley and Colossus let me just start off by saying that piece about Lashley and Colossus, that was weak. Because I'm used to them hyping up a fight and their pieces that they do before the fight. It leaves you salivating for something more. But with the fact that they just kept kind of no narration to it, and you tried to buy into this hype, and it just kind of left you wanting for more. And that's kind of what happened with both Thompsons. One's with a P, one's without a P. Got to remember that. But when you look at Colossus, the interesting standpoint with him was that he had Bobby Lashley beaten before with a decision. Now, if you've seen the fight between them originally, it could have gone either way.
Right. It could have really gone either way between the two. But nonetheless, Colossus had his arm raised, and ultimately he was the victor. So at some point, you're going to get this matchup. You just didn't know what type of matchup you're going to get. And unfortunately, Colossus suffered a freak accident when Bobby Lashley was shooting in for a single leg. And he kind of hyperextended the knee, and well, that's all she wrote.
And when you look at that, and you're seeing, when I first saw that, I saw the hyperextension, don't get me wrong, I saw it. But the way that Bobby Lashley pounced on him and started hitting him, I thought that Colossus could have done a little bit more in protecting himself and defending back. And it just comes back to me, it's like, you hate to say fixed fights, you hate to say that, but to me is that the way that it happened is that it looked initially, perception is that it looked like he just gave up,
right? That's what I thought.
But reality is that when you look back on the thing, I mean, his leg was whack. If Bobby Lashley said he heard a pop, if the ref said he heard a pop, there was probably a pop. Two knees popped in Bellator 145,
right?
One didn't finish, the other one finished. It was one of those crazy nights of, what if it went this way? What if it went this way? It could have gone so many different avenues. This was the biggest one because the heavyweight division in Bellator is weak. There's not many people left. But you look at Bobby Lashley and continue to try to figure out who's left. Who can he possibly fight that is a name value? Well, the only guy that initially popped out to me was Chet Congo. Built similar in stature, depending on which guy you get. If you get the darkness, or you get the guy that goes in the darkness. It really depends on which Chet Congo you get. Now, if you want to go a lesser of the two evils, and you want to continue to baby Bobby Lashley, and you want to say, well, who else can he fight? The other name that popped to me was Chase Gromley. Chase Gromley isn't exactly what you say an elite contender in the heavyweight division, but he does have some name value behind him as he's fought for Titan FC and he's fought for RFA. So if you're looking at another name value guy, kind of along the lines of a James Thompson, Chase Gromley fits that mold. If you now want to build Bobby Lashley as a legitimate heavyweight contender to their heavyweight champion right now, give him Chet Congo.
But see, now there's even talks that there might be even a tournament for the heavyweight title in Bellator for the simple fact that the current heavyweight champion might relinquish the heavyweight title and allow them to fight for the title because he hasn't fought in God knows how long. But this Bellator 145, it did decent in ratings. It didn't do horrible. But when you look at the card and you look at David Rickles versus Michael Chandler, we broke it down last time. The most exciting part about David Rickles was the fact that he came out with a bear-like headdress on.
Sabertooth,
there you go.
Sabertooth Tiger.
But that was the only really exciting thing. I get David Rickles continues to try to get himself out there. The fact that he says, I'm going to wear that belt and it starts with you, as he pointed at Chandler. I'm looking at him like straight up, dude, do you not know what happened last time you faced Michael Chandler? Your night ended quickly. And it was no different this time.
It was a little bit different. He lasted until the second round before he got his nose shattered into 1,000 pieces. You saw his nose literally go from one side of his face to the other side of his face. And then you know it's bad that when my wife is sitting there watching the fight and she's like disgusted about how much blood he's spewing out. And granted, she typically does not get weak of heart from watching guys get beat up because she's been doing it for a while. But he was bleeding a lot. And when you see David Rickles, you begin to wonder if the drop from 170 played any factor that trying to adapt to a quicker guy like a Michael Chandler was too much. That there was a reason why he went up to weight after he got obliterated by Michael Chandler the last time.
See, we always talk about the evolution of fighters, and something has to be done with David Rickles. Because David Rickles, the one glaring weakness that I see in his game is that when he gets into a slugfest, he tends to get overzealous, tends to get carried away, and just starts overswinging and overcompensating for what he truly is. And that's a problem when you're facing a guy like Michael Chandler. Because when he started swinging, Sean, he got wild. He opened himself up. That led him to get clocked. I'm surprised he didn't latch on the guillotine to actually finish the fight and choke him out. But neither here nor there, the fact of the matter is, he got the W. He got the win. Michael Chandler, though, 2-0 in St. Louis. In his hometown. Wants Bellator to keep coming back to St. Louis. At this point, dude, I don't put it past them. Michael Chandler says that this Michael Chandler that you're seeing now in his last two fights is the old Michael Chandler, that when he came into Bellator, it was about finishing opponents. And he didn't care who was standing in front of him. He was going to finish them. He made it perfectly clear after his post-fight conference was that if you're in the lightweight division, if he doesn't have a title shot against Will Brooks, he's going to run through the division and knock out, end quote, every single one of those fools. Well, do you blame the guy? The guy has finally put it all back together after a three-fight losing skid. We told everybody that Michael Chandler needed to figure it out how to get back on the grind. Maybe putting him back in his home turf built, relit that fire for him and said, you know what, guys? I'm going to go back and do what Michael Chandler does best. And that's finish fights. Michael Chandler is a finisher. It doesn't say he's blessed on his chest for nothing. That guy goes out there and puts his fist square in your face. And he finishes the fights. He's exciting every time he fights. But when you look back, it's like, well, then who's left for him to fight?
the only fight is Ill Will Brooks. There is nobody left in front of him. He's got to get that rematch. He's got to get that fight against Will Brooks.
And the thing is that they're talking about Ryan Couture versus a Michael Chandler. I don't think that does anything for Michael Chandler. Nothing at all. And if you get Ryan Couture, nothing against him. I think that if you give Ryan Couture a little bit more seasoning and a little bit more fights underneath his belt, and if he can run off a string of a couple more wins, then okay. You know, I look at him as a possible guy in the lightweight division to face a guy like Michael Chandler. But at this point in time, there is nobody, like you said, John, there is nobody left that you can put in front of Michael Chandler and say, hey, okay, you get him before you get Will Brooks. No. Will Brooks is the number one guy right now in the sights of Michael Chandler. And just like Strauss did, Sean, I don't think that Michael Chandler is going to go up against Will Brooks, and it's going to be Will Brooks walking out of there with the title. I just don't see that.
Considering that the last time we saw Michael Chandler versus Will Brooks, it was one of the most freakiest things I've ever witnessed since covering mixed martial arts. And I've never seen a fighter so discombobulated in that fight when they fought in San Diego. When everybody's like,
what happened?
What did he just hit him with? Nobody knew what Will Brooks hit Michael Chandler with.
I know. For a minute, I thought we were watching David Copperfield for a minute, pulling out a magic trick.
Michael Chandler didn't even know what he got hit with. All we knew, the fight was stopped. So when you go back and you look at Michael Chandler versus Will Brooks, it's been an entertaining fight from the point as soon as they start till the end of the fight. One way or another, it's always entertaining. Entertaining wasn't necessarily the key ingredient in the Will Brooks fight versus Held. But you're wondering that if Held ever wants to get back into a top contender fight, the dude needs to work on his cardio because he was shot after the third round. And Will just had to know, guess what, I'm just going to walk him and get him to that championship rounds. Who would have thought it would have been Will Brooks scoring all the takedowns? Who thought that Will Brooks would have had his knee popped in the first round and then battled through a popped knee, a probably sprained ankle as well from all the heel hooks, the knee locks, everything like that? Marcion Held was pulling all the bag of tricks that he could possibly do in this fight to try to stop Will Brooks. But Will Brooks went ahead and obliged after that to score the takedowns, to score the ground and pound. If the cardio was there for Marcion Held, there was a number of times he could have finished the fight. But the cardio was the issue, and Will Brooks just kept kicking him off, kicking him off, and then proceeded to ground and pound him. Who would have thought that? Is this another strategy in Will Brooks' game plan and again, his repertoire?
Sean, again, we keep telling people this. How do you get better in the mixed martial arts game? What do you do to improve? How do you adapt? Again, Will Brooks, some people you're a fan of. Some people you're not a fan of. There's a lot of people out there that don't like Will Brooks, think he's a stale fighter, think he's a boring fighter. But after watching this fight against Marcion Held, the fact that he had his knee popped, the fact that he fought through injuries, through an injured knee, and that knee bar was sick. But at that point, Sean, he continued to progress throughout the fight. He knew that where he was going to make the bread and butter, where he was going to stand there and trade with Marcion Held, because you knew Marcion Held versus Will Brooks' stand-up was not going to be any kind of contender. But when you're injured, what do you have to do? Adapt. Change your game plan. Do it. You got to give props where props is due because Will Brooks, he went white knuckle on everybody because he straight up went, you know what? I can't stand. I went to the left. I tried to pop. I tried to dance. And all I kept doing was feeling a little bit of wiggle in my knee and I couldn't push off on it. So you know what? I drove through the takedowns. I got through the takedowns. I went to for ground and pound. I went to do stuff that might have been out of my character, but that's all a part of growing as a fighter.
And you don't call Will Brooks ill will for nothing, because he's just simply ill. When you got a guy that can adapt on the fly to when he's hurt and still try to finish a fight in an element that you probably wouldn't anticipate him going to against a guy that is so well sound on the ground, that's being ill. Tell me who can adapt to something like that, right? You can't. You can't tell me that there's anybody in the UFC right now that can go ahead and do what Ill Will did and take a guy to the ground in his element and dominate. You can't. When you look back at fighting through injuries and what's to come, that was the theme of Bellator 145. Daniel Strauss came in against Patricio Pitbull and broke his left hand in the second round, either on the elbow or the hand of Patricio Pitbull.
Basically, almost could have taken his finger completely off. From the x-rays that I've seen and from what all reports say is that it was the most horrific hand injury that a fighter could ever sustain. And Strauss did, and Strauss put on a heck of a performance.
This is one thing that we said last week. Daniel Strauss, on paper, was the better of the two fighters. It was all in Daniel Strauss's head if he could beat a Patricio Pitbull.
You saw Daniel Strauss, again, Bellator puts on some of the best pieces of video that you could when it's done right. And I gotta mention that Daniel Strauss's video where he was sitting, Sean, sitting on a chair with this big screen in front of him. At the fight at Pechanga, remember when he got choked out?
Yeah.
Watching that fight, and all of a sudden, Daniel Strauss stands up, looks at that screen, and says, I can't take this. That wasn't me. I'm not that guy. And got up and walked out. Daniel Strauss knew that night that he was the better man. And he got caught. Because again, when you get happy feet and you leave yourself wide open, you're going to tend to get caught. But if you know that's your mistake and you know you did something wrong, Daniel Strauss knew that he did something wrong and he wasn't going to make that mistake again. Broken hand or not, he was going to finish that fight. And he was going to walk out with that title, and he did.
And rightfully so, because he was a better man in that fight. The thing that when I was watching that, one thing that stood out to me was I've heard for years, Patricio Pitbull is a complainer. He complains about everything. They even reiterated it on the show. Pitbull's known to be a complainer. He took an accidental headbutt and got Big John to stop the fight because of an accidental headbutt, and made it believe that it was a legit headbutt. That was phase one. The eye poke. Jimmy Smith said that it was a legit eye poke. I disagreed. Was his hands extended? Yes. But did it really poke him in the eye so bad that the fight needed to be halted? Probably not. To me, it looked like it just got underneath his eye, not in his eye. So, like, right on the cheekbone area. And again, that was just phase two. So, I'm beginning to see this reminiscings of him being this type of guy that stalls in a fight, try to get his way, that if he slows down the pace sometimes, it's to his advantage. The good thing with Daniel Strauss was he stayed patient. He said that he needed to stay patient. That was part of his game plan. He systematically dissected Patricio Pitbull. When you look at Pitbull, his talent is undeniable. There's no question about that. One of the best in the lightweight division. I don't say that the lightweight division in Bellator is not the best, period, for a reason. But when you look back, one thing I don't understand about Pitbull. Anybody that listens to the show, I've said it 1,000 times. The key thing in life about a pit bull is when you put a pit bull in a corner, he'll come out fighting. Pit bull took shot after shot and was still standing.
That guy has a chin.
I've never seen anything like that. To be able to walk through legit left hooks time and time again, get rocked and get back up and still go toe-to-toe.
What about the spinning elbows and the spinning back fists from Daniel Strauss and still walk through them?
It's one of those things that when you're watching a fighter and you're a legit fighter and you're top of the food chain, you're going to be able to do a lot, apparently. And watching Pitbull, he does a lot. He's able to defend and he's able to fight.
And this,
oh, I'm sorry, the featherweight division.
Right, the featherweight division. I was going to say the 145 division.
They're small.
Right. But in that division, look, you got Pitbull, Pat Curran, Bubba Jenkins. A list could go on for the 145ers. You're going to see more people start coming up. But who's going to face Pitbull now?
And that's where the question that I had. Was the only guy that seems to be at the top of the food chain is Georgia Karkinian. But he needs to stay healthy.
Yeah, he does.
If he can get healthy, that's Daniel Strauss's next opponent. But then you look at Patricio Pitbull, Bubba Jenkins,
Emmanuel Sanchez,
Pat Curran. Pat Curran was supposed to fight against Justin Lawrence, but Emmanuel Sanchez took that spot. On 6 weeks rest,
before we see a Daniel Strauss Michael Chan, I mean the Daniel Strauss fight against Georgie, let's see Daniel Strauss take some time off, recuperate that hand. But I kind of want to see in this fight, I want to see Pitbull face like maybe a Nam Phan. You know, 21-14, or Kobayashi, just to kind of get them to see where they're at in the whole entire ranking system. What about Daniel Weichel? You can put him against him. It's going to be interesting now that you have a guy that has fallen out of the number one spot. So now you almost say, okay, well, move Strauss up, Pitbull comes down. Now it opens up that featherweight division a little bit more.
Their featherweight division are so many different possibilities. What about John Teixeira?
There you go.
He's 3-0 in Bellator. Maybe you'll give him another shot. There's a wide range of possibilities now. And Justin Lawrence, yeah, you know what? He lost to Emmanuel Sanchez, but he's another guy you could easily throw in there. What about Emmanuel Sanchez? Does he move up? Does he take on a Gotti Yamaguchi?
How fast do you want AJ McKee to move up? 2-0 in his first 2 wins in Bellator, how fast do you want him to move up? So, I mean, there's possibilities. Like, we talk about the lightweight division in Bellator, but the featherweight division is no different. Because now you're getting these guys kind of on a roll where you can see a legitimate shake in the standings and a shiftness coming. So, I like where it's going. And, I mean, Bellator had to have liked the ratings, too, from Bellator 145.
Absolutely. When you beat UFC Fight Night 77 by 50,000 viewers, and this goes down as the third highest Bellator fight, you got to be pretty happy with that. And the fact that it was your own Bellator people, the originals.
I was going to say that. The originals, folks. The people that helped build Bellator. And we're going to talk about the freak show known as Kid Shamrock vs. Royce Gracie 3. Kimbo and Data 5000 a little bit later, as we'll revert back to Bellator talk later on. But, Sean, think about this. We had 3 big fights that happened over the weekend. Bellator 145, UFC Fight Night 77, and then we also had Timothy Bradley versus Brandon Rios.
Yeah, UFC 77, Sean got beat out by boxing and Bellator in the ratings. What? What did I say? But you know what? We'll talk about that a little bit later as we go into break right now. Coming up next, we also have UFC 193, Ronda Rousey versus Holly Holm preview coming up Saturday. Stay tuned. More with the Ducrosse Brothers and Sports Warriors.
Excelsior, Imperis Rex, live long and prosper, up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the Ducrosse Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the Ducrosse Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody, we are back. You're listening to the Ducrosse Brothers Sports Warriors. We are Sean and Tristan Ducrosse. Sean, UFC 193 coming right around the corner. Are you kidding me? Ronda Rousey versus Holly Holm. I think I've seen more YouTube videos of Holly Holm knocking out some jobber more than I've seen her actually knock out anybody in the UFC or be as aggressive than in these YouTube videos that I've been seeing. Oh, Holly Holm needs to do this. And have y'all seen her fight in the UFC? She looks like an amateur in the UFC. Nothing to take from Holly Holm. Just being real for a minute. Holly Holm has so much going for her and so much going against her. For her, she's getting a lot of talk and a lot of pub. Radio stations want her. TV wants her. All while Ronda Rousey just sitting back, chilling, taking her training a little bit more serious. But the thing that I see about Holly Holm is that we need to see an aggressive Holly Holm. But not a over-aggressive like she would become Beth Krier or Kat Zingano or Misha Tate. Understand distance is your key. Understand the game plan that you set forth is that you maintain it. Don't get it twisted when you're in that ring. And you look across and you see Ronda Rousey standing right across from you. Don't pull a turtle and say, just give me 30 seconds. I can last this. This ain't the Entourage movie. This is real life. Woman-on-woman crime here is about to be committed. And any way I look at this, I don't see Holly Holm coming out the victor. I can't see it. Unless she comes out like the YouTube video that's been circulating all around the social media about the head kick heard around the world. This isn't amateurs. This is every day. Ronda Rousey puts in the work, puts in the time. She won't get caught like that.
When you're talking about what's to come, what does this fight hold for both fighters? I said it last week with our buddy Carlos Kramer. We're going to see a more precise fighter in Ronda Rousey just because of who Holly Holm is. And I say who Holly Holm is because when you look at her record, it's like, so I was beginning to wonder, where does everybody get all this hoopla about Holly Holm and being this fantastic finisher? That video made rounds of a head kick. And everybody said, when Holly Holm came in, she was a finisher. But here's some news for you. Holly Holm, 32-3-2 as a boxer. As a kickboxer, 2-1. Notice something there. 32 wins in boxing. Want to know how many of those were KOs? I know if I remember correctly, you can't count on two hands. She has 9 finishes.
See?
For the last year, Tristan and myself have been telling everybody she's underwhelming. She's not exciting. She's a point boxer. Everybody's like, no, she's not. No, she's not. It's been an ongoing battle that you could shuffle through our Facebook with battles of people saying that how great Holly Holm is. Her record doesn't lie. She's good at what she does. But there's a reason why she was successful in boxing. It's because she is a point style boxer. She didn't go out there to knock people out. Essentially, she was the Floyd Mayweather of women's boxing. 15-time world champion. Cue the Ric Flair music. When you look back and you see what she's done, she's very knowledgeable in how to use angles and technique. That's one thing Ronda Rousey does not know how to obtain in an octagon. She goes one way or the other. She grapples you, throws you down on the mat because of her judo style. She will be the aggressor in your face. But when you come in into a wheelhouse of a Holly Holm, if you try to engage Tristan with a Holly Holm, she's going to drop back, hit you with some counters, and sucker you into that game plan. That's why I believe Ronda Rousey is going to step back. Because if she goes in, not necessarily get knocked out, but she's going to go in and get comboed up by a Holly Holm.
But let's have our viewers go ahead, look on YouTube. Look at Holly Holm's fights in the UFC. You say she's a point boxer in boxing. I say she's even a point MMA fighter if you think about it. Because look at it this way, Sean. She uses her distance, uses her advantage, keeps people at arm's width at all times, uses her jabs, uses her kicks to the point where it's that distance is there. At some point, Ronda Rousey is going to have to try to push through that. Nobody in the UFC out of Holly Holm's wins has been able to get past her reach when she's throwing out her jabs or her little push kicks or her angles. Nobody's really been able to set the tempo or set the tone away from what she's been able to do. So then it comes back to what's Ronda Rousey's game. You don't think she should rush in. But I think this is like a two-headed coin, Sean. Because think about it. If you don't rush in, then you're playing into Holly Holm's kind of game plan. Because Holly Holm doesn't want to engage in that. Holly Holm wants to engage in that distance, in that point boxing style. But if you are Ronda Rousey and you want to win, I think you almost have to become the aggressor. And you have to come after Holly Holm. Because if you sit back, you might get overworked to the point where you might be left, well, how do I get inside?
And I was just thinking about that. You brought up a good point in that sense, is that if she's not the aggressor and she can and can't get inside, then you just allowed Holly Holm to establish her jab and her point boxing style. Then there is no chance of recovering unless you blitz at a later time and hope you don't get caught with a liver kick or a head kick. See, it's different in boxing when you're doing a point boxing system and you're going one-on-one with somebody, because technically you have between 10 and 12 rounds to do something. In MMA, you have 3 5-minute rounds.
Or you have
five-minute rounds. So at what point do you think, okay, well, the point boxing system's working for Holly Holm and she's pushing the fight, and yet you're kind of sit back and you're waiting for your moment. In MMA, if you wait for your moment, you lose. It goes to the judges, and ultimately, what do they say? Don't leave it in the hand of the judges?
Well, either way, this fight's not going to be left in the hand of the judges. Let me just say that. This fight is not going to the judges. Somebody is getting knocked out. Somebody is being submitted one way or another. Do I think Holly Holm can knock her out?
if she gets a clean left hook, maybe. But ultimately, I think too much is given is that it's going to be Ronda Rousey's fight to lose. And I believe she wins the fight in the second round. I think this is the first time that it goes past the first round for a woman that has only spent a total of about 25 minutes in the cage and an average about two minutes a round.
But I will have to admit, though, I do like UFC 193 card just by the sheer fact that, once again, we have a main event of the evening that is a girl fight, but we also have a somewhat of a co-main event fight with a Jade Jack versus Canadian Valerie, I can't even...
Letourneau.
There you go.
Exactly how it looks, Letourneau. That fight intrigues me, unfortunately, more so than Ronda Rousey versus Holly Holm.
Oh, absolutely, because a J-Jack, again, a very well-rounded fighter. But Valerie Letourneau, again, getting no recognition.
Because she's Canadian.
Right? If you're not George St. Pierre, who the hell cares about you, right?
Especially if apparently you're from Canada.
Dude, if you're the Red King, all you remember him is that he was a crimson mask at the end of his Robbie Lawler fight. That's all you remember him for. But Valerie Letourneau, when you... Dude, how disrespectful is this? Valerie Letourneau comes up, you know, the face-off, face-to-face, right? Joanna J.J. looks at her and laughs at her. Like, you are a world champ. You're supposed to be the class of the organization. And you're laughing at your opponent just because she wants to do a stare down? Come on. Like, is that where we're going? That's as bad as everybody right now in the world that's complaining about Starbucks hollow on the Christmas cup. Who cares? It's a red cup. Who cares if she wanted to do a stare down? Oh, it wasn't her time to do the stare down. Who cares? Since when is there a time frame on a stare down?
It's the UFC. It doesn't.
She was looking at me sideways. Duh. You have a title she wants, right?
This fight was an interesting one because of the fact that Claudia Gardella was supposed to fight Joanna Jędrzejczyk, but she got injured. Valerie Letourneau comes up and goes ahead and takes on the fight. After she just recently struggled to make weight at 115, she's 3-0 in the strawweight division. She's won her last two fights. Right place, right time, apparently. But what I like about this fight is much like what was wrong with the fight against Joanna Jędrzejczyk against Jessica Penney. Jessica Penney got one of the worst beatings a woman has ever had put on them in a octagon in UFC, period.
In history, though, let's just be real. In history, no girl that I've ever seen been dissected and brutalized as bad as her outside of Greg Hardy's beating of his girl.
Too soon.
Too soon?
Too soon. But when you look back at that fight, it has a lot of eerie resemblances to what we're going to see in this fight. This fight, I'm calling it, my prediction, bloodbath, fight of the night. Because of the fact that, unlike Jessica Penney, she couldn't stand in the pocket. She didn't have the heart to take the beating. Well, she kind of did. But unlike her, Valerie Letourneau is built for the pocket. She's built to counter. She's tough as nails. She will stand there and take shot as well as deliver shots. If Jędrzejczyk wants to engage in a pocket fighting war, this will be exactly that. Somebody's going to get bloodied up. Somebody's getting messed up. I have this one as my fight of the night.
See, and I agree with that. I think that these women are going to tear down the house. You're going to be left salivating and wanting more of the Ronda Rousey fight, just like you always do. It's probably going to end in like just mere seconds. They might ring the bell and announce this fight is canceled because somewhere in the back locker room, she flipped on an arm bar and it was done. That's the way that you see this. And then you have Mark Hunt versus Antonio Bigfoot Silva. Again, two guys that were brutalized in their last fight. And many people didn't even think Mark Hunt would even leave a hospital bed, and let alone fight again. And here he is against Bigfoot Silva. But the card's not horrible.
No, it's not. It's Uriah Hall's on it. Stefan Skyscraper Struve is on it. Dude, how does this guy keep getting a fight? Like, are people just interested in him because he's a Jolly Green Giant? Because I've always said that this guy needs to add at least 50 to 20 pounds to be considered a force in the heavyweight division. Because just because you're over almost 8 feet tall, it don't mean anything. Stefan Struve, man, against Jared Rosholt. Gatekeeper? Yes. You're going to be a guy that's going to be the guy that, oh, hey, he's 8 feet tall. If you can beat him, we'll think about giving you another fight. So here's an interesting thing, okay? Uriah Hall has taken on Robert Whittaker. Robert Whittaker wanted this fight. Robert Whittaker has made it known since he came back. Uriah Hall is an interesting candidate because of the fact that if he wins this fight, where does he go from here? He's a middleweight. He beat Gegard Mousasi via TKO via strikes. When you look at it and you see about Uriah Hall at middleweight, and we were talking about what just transpired at UFC Fight Night 77, and I was wondering about Vitor Belfort. Maybe if Uriah Hall wins, that's a guy the UFC makes an interesting, compelling fight for. I wouldn't mind seeing that. It'd be another name on Uriah Hall that he could go ahead and take, continue to cement himself in UFC as a legit middleweight. It makes sense to me.
Uriah Hall is 2-1 in his last three fights. Uriah Hall is a guy that could be a hit or miss, though. Because based off of his skills, he really shouldn't be losing relatively any of those fights. So it would be interesting for him to face a guy like Robert Whittaker. Because his performance level could be that of like a Rafael Tavares. A guy that could take on guys like that has taken on a guy like Court McGee or Michael Bisping. You have guys that can make a road to redemption, and that's kind of along the lines where he's at, because going on a 3-fight win streak and versus a 2-fight win streak, you set yourself up for a middle of the road fight. But at what point do you think that these gatekeepers deserve a jump into the limelight?
And that's one thing that I'm saying about the fact that when you look at Robert Whittaker, he was supposed to fight Michael Bisping. If you're looking at your opportunities to fight Michael Bisping or Uriah Hall,
I'm taking Michael Bisping.
Yeah, if you're looking for that name fight, but if you're looking for something that's going to elevate you, I think Uriah Hall is going to elevate Robert Whittaker more than Michael Bisping, because Michael Bisping, again and again and again, is what we classify as the gatekeeper of the middleweight division. You go through him to make a name for yourself. Dude, but you got a rising star in Uriah Hall that wants that next spot. You want Robert Whittaker that wants that next spot. So why put two hungry guys together to clash that has implications on a future potential opportunity at a title?
But see, this is where it gets interesting. Uriah Hall versus Robert Whittaker. What they've done right now in the last couple of months is interesting. Because, Sean, we just saw Vitor Belfort, and we're going to talk about it here in a minute, is that Vitor Belfort in the middleweight division, Dan Henderson in the middleweight division. When you're looking at these two guys, they're right there in the middleweight division too. One slipped. Maybe them two? The winner of those get Dan Henderson? It could make it interesting, an interesting kind of way for them to kind of start shifting and going in the right direction. But only time will see for these two fighters and what comes about it. But Sean, We got UFC Fight Night 77 outcome. Epic Fighting 29 out here in San Diego went down over the weekend. We got Boxing Talk. We got so much more with your boys with the DuCrosse Brothers Sports Warriors right here on Blog Talk Radio.
Excelsior, in Paris Rex. Live long and prosper. Up, up, and away. Now that's my personal favorite. Fanboy Nation is go. Welcome to Fanboy Nation magazine, the home of all things fanboy and fangirl, not just the same stuff you can get anywhere else. Only at Fanboy Nation will we go beyond the generic questions of, so what's your favorite pencil? What kind of strings do you use? And how did it feel when you put on X costume? We give you insight into the lives of the artists, producers, the movers, the shakers, the indies, up-and-comers, the bigwigs, and most importantly, the little guys. If you haven't gotten yourself over to fanboynation.com, you need to do it today.
You are listening right now to the DuCrosse Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCrosse Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
All right, everybody. You're listening to the DuCrosse Brothers, the Sports Warriors, with your boys. I'm Tristan DuCrosse. Well, on my side, as always, my partner in crime, Sean DuCrosse. So, UFC Fight Night 77 went down in not the best fashion. Sao Paulo, Brazil. Nobody cared.
Literally, nobody cared.
It's like, what? It's what happens when you put on too many fight cards in too short of a time span with other major fight cards coming along. Look at how Bellator spreads theirs out. At some point, you're feeding the MMA community way too much MMA down their throats that you're causing issues more than results. Two of their last fight nights have been meh.
Lackluster.
We told everybody last week nobody care was going to care about UFC Fight Night 77, and sure enough, nobody did.
It's funny. People talk about Bellator and their Walker division, but yet you had 38-year-old Vitor Belfort versus a 46-year-old and Dan Henderson?
But yet you're complaining about two 52-year-old fighters. That makes sense.
Because they're along the same lines.
It's just because it's Bellator, apparently. And that's why everybody wants to call it a freak show. It is what it is. It caters to fans. Period.
Let me tell you, fans are going to watch. I'm not going to watch. Yeah, you are.
And we'll talk about that. But,
right. But Vitor Belfort, during the weigh-ins, off of TRT, 38 years old, looked legitimately smaller and like a skeleton of what he used to look like. And last time he fought was against Chris Weidman, first time off of TRT, remember? He got his face smashed in. He looked slow and sluggish. Now somehow he looked in worse shape, but yet he looked faster and stronger?
Is that even possible?
Yo, how did that exactly work out? You go from being a slow poke, a slow guy, against Chris Weidman to a guy that has finishing power. Did I miss something somewhere around here? At the age of 38, you're not supposed to go forward. You're supposed to keep going backwards, kind of like Dan Henderson.
And it's so weird to see how Vitor Belfort looks compared to what he looked like on TRT. It's weird. But hey, I guess when you got skill, it's undeniable. Regardless if you have TRT in you, regardless of whatever. If you have the technique, you're just going to be just fine. When you've got technique over one punch, you're going to win out. You always had that puncher's chance in Dan Henderson. We said that last week. We said that Dan Henderson was going to win that fight because of the puncher's chance, because what Vitor Belfort looked like on paper. Seeing that fight now makes you go, hold up, wait a second. He leaves the Black Zillion. He's quicker. He's faster. He seemingly still has that kick upside your head. He dips that right shoulder down, comes right up with that left leg, and kicks you square across the dome. Because when he drops that right, you think he's going to cock and he's going to fire that right off. So you're already put your hands up or drop your hands a little bit to get in position to absorb either a body shot or a head shot. In this case, he dropped his hands to protect his body and got kicked up the upside the head. Vitor Belfort does what Vitor Belfort does. Jump him. But with this win, Sean, now you have questions again about the middleweight division. Vitor Belfort, again, you're looking at a guy that, geez, just when you think that we've had enough of Vitor Belfort, and like Tim Kennedy says, we need to get rid of him in the UFC or in MMA in general, you're left like, this guy is like a cat. He has 9 lives. Why won't you just die? Right. Vitor Belfort, again, shows that he can compete at a high level. I get it. But you got Luke Rockhold versus Chris Weidman for that title. Don't forget you have Yakari Souza, Yoel Romero, and Tim Kennedy, the notorious Tim Kennedy, calling out anybody and everybody because he still can't get a fight, wants Vitor Belfort. The middleweight division, it seems like it doesn't matter where you go in combat sport, but the middleweight division is the division to be in, period. Middleweight or lightweight division. In the UFC, you want to be in the middleweight division because it can go so many different avenues. In Bellator, you want to be in the lightweight division. That's where everybody is. In this instance, Tim Kennedy says that the UFC or the MMA record books needs to be written of said individual, of Vitor Belfort. But Tim Kennedy is in the top 10? Yes. He's rated probably about like top 7 or ish or something like that. But if Vitor Belfort, who says he wants the winner of Rockhold, he wants Rockhold, so then if he gets Rockhold, it'll have to be the winner of Rockhold versus Weidman. But in that process, he needs another contender. If he wants an opportunity at another fight at the top dogs, it's not going to be Tim Kennedy. I'm sorry. It's going to have to be a guy against Yakari Souza, who the UFC continues to duck at giving him an opportunity to fight for the title because of his Strikeforce pedigree. Yes, I'm saying that. Even though Luke Rockhold is Strikeforce pedigree, but stylistic matches says Luke Rockhold Weidman is better. Ground guy, not going to be that exciting. I disagree. Yakari Souza is a beast. So it's going to be interesting to see what Joe Silva does with Vitor Belfort.
But what is Joe Silva going to do about Dan Henderson?
2-6 in his last 8 fights. This guy got destroyed by Vitor Belfort. And don't get me wrong, dude, he had a 28-second knockout against Tim Boach. Look at Tim Boach. I brought this up on last week's show. Remember, Sean? Is that as a guy that is 45 years old, your legs are gone, your body's worn down, it's broken down, and all you have left, Sean, is your power in your hands. But if you can't move and you can no longer move those arms, how are you going to get those punches off? Well, you can still see a guy that's 38 years old, that's 29 years old, that's 30 years old, that can stick and move with the best of them. They're not stationary targets like Tim Boach. Is now the time for Dana White to pull a Chuck Liddell, sit down Dan Henderson, and say, hey, dude, at 45 years old, I'm calling it. I'm tapping you out. You're done. You're retiring because I said you're retiring. Is this the time that Dana White needs to step in like he did Chuck Liddell and say, enough's enough. We can't have you doing this anymore.
I believe that's the way that it needs to go. There's no question. I mean, everybody loves Dan Henderson, but they want to remember Dan Henderson for being the great guy that he is, for being one of the ambassadors of the sport and been around for so long and doing so much for the MMA world.
that you want to make sure that his health is still legit, that it's still good. And seeing these endings, it's getting to the point you just want to protect him.
Absolutely. Because the only other logical choice that I could see him facing would be a guy like, even though he has come out and said he'll never fight him again, is Michael Bisping. That's the only other shot you have as Dan Henderson.
And when you're talking about protecting individuals, it comes right down to what we were talking about earlier, touched on earlier. It was announced at Bellator 145, Ken Shamrock versus Royce Gracie 3. Talking about trying to protect individuals thrown right out the door. When we broke this story, we were the first ones to break it. Not Bleacher Report, not MMA Junkie, nobody. We were.
Not MMA Fighting.
So I'm just making sure I put that out there to everybody.
The Ducros Brothers of Sports Warriors were the number one news source in combat and MMA sports to break the Ken Shamrock.
Even before Bellator broke it.
Right. That's true. We were. Before Bellator, before MMA Junkie, before Bloody Elbow, before MMA Fighting, before everybody, sure enough. Your boys, the Sports Warriors, got the scoop first.
And it was so funny because when we broke the news that this fight was happening, everybody said I was a liar. I had to post the email for everybody to show I'm not lying because I beat everybody to the punch. And then after it was announced, it was like, oh.
Oh, he is right.
He is right. Yeah, he's right. Yeah, he's right. Yeah, he's right. All over my Facebook. So when this fight came down, is it what people are going to classify as a freak show? I hate that word. It annoys me to death. But when you look at this fight, Ken Shamrock versus Royce Gracie, this is a better matchup than it was Kimbo Slice versus a Ken Shamrock.
I like this matchup in the retrospect that it's the legends of the aftermath of what the UFC used to be and was.
It was the UFC. It was the MMA before the rules and the regulations.
I like this fight too because you said it first was that these two guys are going to come in at their normal weight. That's how you fought when you came into the UFC at UFC 1. It didn't matter if you were 300, 400 pounds. It didn't matter about what kind of style you were. It didn't matter. Wear a gi, don't wear a gi. Wear shorts, don't wear shorts. It didn't matter. Bare knuckle fighting kind of old school days. Didn't matter what your weight was. And that's kind of what they're doing here. They're going old school. Apparently, Royce Gracie's going to wear his gi.
Oh, there's no doubt. He's never not going to wear his gi in a fight. He's going to wear his gi. This is going to be an old school fight. Royce Gracie says he's going to come in weighing at 180. Ken Shamrock is expected to come in weighing about 200 pounds. Old school MMA fighting, fighting at a catch weight, if you will, in the new era. Who cares? One man's going to walk out of that octagon February 19th in Houston, Texas, one way or another. When you look at that fight, but here's something interesting. Ken Shamrock and Royce Gracie have both been popped in the MMA world for steroids. Can you believe that? Royce Gracie was popped in 2007 after his fight at Dynamite against Kayashi Sakuraba, and it was no contest because he tested for positive for steroids. That was the last time he fought. You got two steroid users. I'm waiting for people to pull that up,
right? You want to touch on every single thing about this Royce Gracie and the Ken Shamrock? Dude, bad as that announcement was from Bellator itself on that stage, it wasn't the worst announcement.
No, what the worst announcement was the fact that we got Kimbo Slice
versus Dada 5000.
What the?
Hey, did you see the poster? Tell me you saw the poster. Tell me you saw the poster. Tell me. Sean, please tell me.
I saw the poster.
Okay. Did you see how many plastic surgeries Shamrock has had on that poster? He looks younger on that poster than he did facing off against Royce Gracie.
I swear Keith Sherman looked like he had a couple too many martinis or beers going up onto that stage.
He probably did. It looked awkward with Kurt Angle.
Right?
But when you look back
at... But you got Dana 5000 with the red mohawk and a sledgehammer.
When you look at that fight, I was puzzled. Because we've been adamant about getting Zoe Hood against Kimbo Slice. Instead, you go off the streets in Florida and pick a guy who's 2-0 in the MMA world, apparently, to take on Kimbo Slice. Why? For a good old street fight brawl? Take off their gloves and say, here, have at it. Let's go tape it on YouTube.
Let's go ahead and have an all-out kind of backyard brawl.
But you want to put Kimbo Slice on this pedestal in the heavyweight division and not give Zoe Hood an opportunity to fight in Bellator when you classified him as your top heavyweight prospect, when you continue to not give him a fight? How does that make sense? This is one thing I will be adamant and stand by, Tristan, is the fact that this is the one fight I absolutely have a disdain in my mouth for when you've got other fighters out there that deserve this chance. For crying out loud, then go put Bobby Lashley against them. Put Bobby Lashley against Kimbo Slice. Not some guy off the street 2-0 that fights on YouTube like Kimbo Slice. Give me a break.
That's the only one that I think is an ultimate freak show.
It is.
I'm okay with the Royce Gracie and the Kid Shamrock 3. I get it.
Because if you're an MMA fan,
this is something, regardless of their age, if you put their age aside and you say Kid Shamrock, Royce Gracie, you think the legends of the sport. I get it. I'll look past that.
Because how many people in UFC 1 got a chance to see that fight?
Nobody.
I didn't.
Right? I've seen footage.
In 1995, I didn't get a chance to see UFC 5 against Royce Gracie and Ken Shamrock go 36 minutes, the longest MMA fight in the history.
And the fact that they had to go through a half a dozen referees? Name one time that you ever saw that where you legitimately had to go through 12 referees, 36 minutes, rotate judges.
There was no judges.
True.
There was no judges at that time.
But the constant rotation during this fight was remarkable. Not many people have been able to see that. I want to see this. As an MMA fan, as an MMA personality, as a guy that follows combat sports, I want to see Royce Gracie. I want to see Kid Shamrock.
I
want to
say
what
that
I don't want to see Kid Shamrock versus Dada 5000.
At least I wanted to say that in my lifetime, I got to see Ken Shamrock versus Royce Gracie. If I could make it to Houston, Texas, just to be there in person to see this fight, it'll go down on my bucket list as something I got to witness. In the era of MMA, whether you're young or old, the bottom line is you're going to tune in to watch this fight because of the fact of who they are and what they bring to the table. And when you look at that, all you can do as a fan is applaud the efforts of two 52-year-old guys who brought MMA to the forefront, who fought in bare knuckles, and who everybody absolutely loved to death in that era. Good, bad, or indifferent, for whatever reason why you don't like Ken Shamrock, for whatever reason why you don't like Royce Gracie, these two are the icons and the legend of this sport. Whether Royce Gracie says that it's a joke for Ken Shamrock to be called the world's dangerous man when he's not, to that I'm the best guy to ever fight in Ken Shamrock, that's a story in itself. And that's the era that people need to understand. That's why this is going to be ratings galore, is because of these two, you want to see this. It's not that lopsided.
No, it's not that lopsided. And when you're looking at Royce Gracie, Sean, even something that he said that he touched on was that at 50 years old, Sean, he's better now than he was when he first came into the octagon world. Are you serious?
And that's a scary thing to think about that.
A 50-year-old says that he's better now than what he was when he first came in. That alone gets me to buy in. We have talked to Royce Gracie. This guy still has that Gracie name behind him. Yes, there's been a lot of ups and downs about the Gracie name and the value of it. But let's be real. He's a Gracie. He's the first of the generation.
Original. The original OG. When you look back, so you look at all that and everything else like that, you know, we're almost running out of time. We did a little bit extra today, just like we did last week. Let's go ahead and touch on Epic Fighting 29 went down in San Diego this past week. It was one of those fights that left you wondering what exactly happened, because it wasn't the best Epic Fighting
that we've known,
and why Southern California is a hotbed for amateur fighters. It wasn't the best. It was a lot of lopsided matchups that left you puzzled. But at the same time, there was a couple rising stars that made you go,
right?
People you may have to watch out for. And the biggest one that you have to watch out for is Jonathan Wang Kim. I don't know anything about this kid. But yet the city of San Diego area is all over the Wang Kim's guys like it's going out of style.
Dude, these guys are legit.
Jonathan Wang Kim took on a guy named Cole Crystal in what was perhaps the most fluid finishing move I've ever seen. Went into a guillotine where he jumped up in a standing guillotine, wrapped his legs around him, and then pulled the guy down. And it's like, oh, shoot, this fight's going to end in a guillotine. Next thing you know, he's switching around into an arm bar. The guy taps in 32 seconds. What?
Yeah. Sean, you've seen some fighters. We've seen so many fighters over the years. And to honestly be able to sit here and say that that was a special night to watch Jonathan Wang Kim perform like he did in 32 seconds is an impressive feat in itself. Because for the simple fact that when you look at Jonathan Wang Kim and how he fluidly moved, you don't even see pros move as fluid as him. From one submission to another. You don't see people able to do that. But it left you wanting for more, because you were hoping that you would see his twin brother there fighting too. But due to a freak accident, he sliced his big toe and could not fight.
And I would be curious to see what he looked like in person too, to see these two kids fight as well as they did.
But another fight that I thought that was really interesting was the Julian Baez fight versus Julian Waterbury, because the implications on this was that the winner of this was going to be the number one contender to face Joseph Williams for the Epic amateur title. After Richie Redarte no-showed this event because he was given originally the go-ahead that, hey, if you want to fight Joseph Williams, show up at the event. He didn't show up. So this became a number one contenders fight. But Julian Baez, again, the giant slayer, if you want to call him that, continues to take down guys that are either bigger than him or more experienced than him. And he doesn't care. He took Julian Waterbury to the max.
You have to watch out for Julian Baez. Now, this is the second time we've seen Julian Baez. He fought at TFE. Put on a show there.
And he's 2-0 since the two fights we've seen him.
Yeah. And he's very good at what he does. He knows how to stand on his feet and knows how to bang. It'll be interesting to see how well he defends on the ground against Joseph Williams. Because there is nobody better in the amateur scene that I've seen lately that is better than Joseph Williams on the ground. Different animal, different beast. But Julian Baez has adopted this moniker of being the giant slayer. If anybody can knock off Joseph Williams, it may be Julian Baez. But if it's going to be a Joseph Williams versus Julian Baez, you're going to have to make sure that this fight is a main event and not a co-main event or somewhere else on the card, because of the fact that this could go so many different ways. And I think that's what's intriguing against Julian Baez versus Joseph Williams coming up in the new year for Epic Fighting.
Julian Baez versus Joseph Williams, though, Sean, that stare down was crazy, because I thought Joseph Williams was like, dude, don't even buck at me. I will snap your arm right here, right now.
Kind of.
That's what that looked like. Julia Byers was like, dude, I will whoop you right now.
I will own you.
Another three rounds? Sure, I got all night to do this again. Joseph Williams just like, dude, don't even test me, homie. But that's what you get. One thing that I thought that I had my hopes set high for was for the women main event, Lacey Lowes. We were told she's just a year into her Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu was a beast on the ground. Yet she never took it to the ground. She tried to stand toe-to-toe with Hohenleiter, and just Hohenleiter just picked her apart.
Yeah, it was a clinic by Anita Hohenleiter. But there is a future for Lacey Lowes. She's got a lot of promise. Just got to learn how to take the fight to the ground or work on her stand-up. One or the other. If she wants to stand up, just work on the stand-up. But it was an interesting fight. It didn't go according to plan, I don't think.
I think she should sue somebody for selling them the bill of goods. Just saying.
But, you know, that was it. I think that's about it.
Well, Timothy Bradley, I want to talk about that. Timothy Bradley fought over the weekend. And like I was telling you, Sean, for the ratings, Bellator 145, 814,000 viewers. UFC Fight Night 77 had 757,000 viewers. Timothy Bradley's fight alone on HBO, 910,000 viewers watched that boxing fight just for Timothy Bradley.
And Timothy Bradley wasn't anybody to write home about.
No, because he's still the same Timothy Bradley. Although the only real note that's been circulating around the whole entire web has been Teddy Atlas' fireman speech. You want to try to get pumped up during what you call
it? It's one of the best fight speeches I've ever heard, because what does he do right after that?
Goes and finishes the fight.
Finishes the fight against Brandon Rios. Sends Brandon Rios in rehab, in the retirement. Okay. But he's the WBO welterweight champion.
But let's see him face guys, instead of facing guys that are favorable to him, because Brandon Rios was out of shape, almost died twice during weight cutting, and looked just completely out of shape and worn down and drawn out. So I don't know if this was a good test for Timothy Bradley, but let's see him against an Adrian Broner. Let's see him against a Sean Porter, Amir Khan. Let's see if this is the new kind of Timothy Bradley.
You're talking
right?
about Timothy Bradley versus Canelo.
Let's pause on that first. Let's get him some W's against quality opponents like Sean Porter.
You look at Canelo, he's listed as a middleweight, not a welterweight. So stick to guys in the welterweight division. So if you want to pump up a Timothy Bradley in the welterweight division, by all means, have at it.
Right?
But let's make Timothy Bradley the focal point of the welterweight division then. Put guys in front of him like a Keith Thurman, a Sean Porter. Maybe the winner of those two take on a Timothy Bradley. Why not?
Let's start getting these guys going in the right direction. But we are the DuCross Brothers, Sports Words. Hit us up on Facebook, Sean and Tristan DuCross. You want to talk combat sports? We can do it all day. You can also hit us up on Twitter, at the DuCross Bros. Check out our website, www.thehotspotshow.com. We do this every Wednesday, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Same bat channel, same bat time. I'm Tristan DuCross, along my side as always,
Sean DuCross. Till next time.
You are listening right now to the DuCross Brothers here on Blog Talk Radio. To check out more of the DuCross Brothers, head over to thehotspotshow.com.
Let's get it on!
Sprawl and brawl, ground and pound. Get ready for an MMA showdown. Now, the ultimate Octagon Insider, Sean and Tristan DuCross.